Hey folks, and welcome to another episode of Podcraft. This is the show about everything podcasting, from launching your show to monetization and everything in between. I'm your host, Colin Gray, as always. And this time around, we've got a good interview going on, which is around something that I've been intending to cover for a while, which is accessibility. And I've been intending to cover for a while thanks to some prompts from my wonderful guest today, who is Nick Steenhout. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing pretty good, Colin. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good, good. Well, I'll say thanks to you as well in return for prompting me around this stuff, because I think I've maybe mentioned on Twitter, I used to work in the public sector and working with universities and stuff like that. And accessibility was always a huge consideration when we're working with the technology that I used to use to teach students and stuff like that. But I have to admit, it's not something I've considered enough in what we do now, especially around the podcasting area. So it's good to have you on just to chat about podcast accessibility in general.
Yeah. I think it's something that's not really on people's radar screen because it's kind of out of our realm of experience in general. But when we start understanding the importance and the impact, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to ignore it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's so many aspects to it as well, I think, isn't there? Because we're not just recording audio, but we're having to create web pages that go along with them and everything. So
yep.
It'd be great. Yeah, let's dive into it then. So I'm coming at this from a total novice point of view here. So with the podcast itself, so we do our audio recording, you know, we have our chat, we have our conversation. Normally what we do is we take that, we post that out onto the web, and we create a little show notes text page to go along with it. Where do you start when you're starting to advise people on how to go about making all of this more accessible? Where's the first step?
Yeah, I'm going to take it one step before that, actually, because I think it's important for people to understand a couple things about accessibility. The first thing is that on average in the Western world, there's about 20% of people that have reported one disability or another. So we're talking about 1 in 5 people that have accessibility needs. And the other aspect to that is that it's not just about accessibility. We can increase all kinds of aspects to our show. There was a case study done that the show This American Life by NPR. They decided to provide transcript for all their shows, and suddenly they saw that they had an indexed, searchable facility for all their shows, so they could find content easy. They had an increase, I think it's like something like 8% increase in search on search results on Google, because suddenly all their shows were available. So accessibility is good for obviously people with disabilities, that's the primary target, but it's also good for the show hosts and for increasing traffic and making life easier. There's always this guy that wants to listen to a podcast at lunch in his cubicle, but he doesn't necessarily want to share that with people. So if there's a transcript, they can get to it easy. So there's all kinds of aspects.
Excellent. That's good stuff. Yeah, good to justify it in the first place and give us another reason for it too. So yeah.
So going back to your question, there's two main areas that we have to think about is the audio or video file itself. You know, if you do video podcasting, and these there's two main criteria. The first thing is if it's an audio show, you want to provide transcript. And if it's a video, you want to create captions. And there's easy ways. If you create a transcript, then you can use YouTube to use that to do the timing on the captions. But we can get into the nitty-gritty of how to do these in a little bit.
Okay, sure.
The other aspect, as you said, is the site itself. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends that are blind that really consume a lot of podcasts. But one of their main gripes is that they get to a website and they can't get through the site to access the podcast at all.
Okay.
They would like to listen to a podcast. They would like to consume your information, but there's just no way to get to it.
Okay. So Yeah, so transcripts seem to me that is the kind of an easy first win for people just to start actually doing transcripts in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think transcripts are the first and easiest way to go about making your podcast accessible to people. There's three main ways to create transcripts, and it goes from cheap and really painful to expensive and really easy.
Yeah.
So obviously the first way is to do the transcript yourself. And there's a variety of tools out there that are free that allow you to do the transcription fairly straightforward, but it's time consuming.
Yeah.
When I do my own transcript, even though I'm used to it, it can take me easy 2-3 times the amount of audio time to actually transcribe properly.
Yeah.
So it can be quite time consuming.
Yes.
The second part would be to purchase the service of automatic transcription. And that, you know, there's all kinds of service, but you can find it from about 10 cents per minute US. There's a high error rate for that. And by high, it might be maybe 85%, 87% accurate, which still means that one word in 10 is actually incorrect. And that can really change the meaning quite a bit into what's going on. And finally, the last bit is to purchase human transcription. The service I'm using is costing me about $1 US per minute. So it's not super expensive, but it's an expense that's there. I do it systematically for my podcast because it's a question of principle for me. But I also realize all the benefits of it.
Yeah, indeed. So we've tried both the automated and the professional one, I suppose. The one we use, I don't know what about yourself, but we've used Rev. Rev's our kind of usual professional one. That's the $1 a minute system that we use more often than not. Always great. I mean, it barely needs edited usually. So that's brilliant. And the one we've tried automatically, I think we chatted about this on Twitter, was Trint. So T-R-I-N-T. They're a decent automated one. And you're right. They claim to have, I remember seeing that, claim to have like 85 to 90% accuracy. I was like, oh, that seems good. That's quite high, but you're absolutely right. If it means that there's a word wrong in every single sentence and you're doing 2,000 words, that's a lot of editing to get that fixed.
Yes. For what it's worth, I use Rev. I love Rev. I do have to do a bit of editing, but that's because the topic of my podcast, accessibility, ends up being quite technical. It can be interesting from that perspective.
Yes. How do you find it with a non-US accent? Because I find Trint is a lot less accurate for me than it probably is for your average US speaker.
Yeah, automated transcription for non-US accents is probably tricky. I lived in New Zealand for nearly 15 years and I had issues with audio files done automated that way. Rev, I've thrown people that were Japanese speakers, Australians, Canadians, French, all with interesting accents. But it's not been a problem.
Yeah. Okay. Still works well enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you recommend putting the transcript out there then? Where would you include it? And do you think sometimes would you use it to replace the show notes or is it an addition to that? What's your sort of general recommendations?
Okay. There's generally three main ways that people put podcasts in. The first one is they do a PDF and they link the PDF to the show. And that's a problem because 9 times out of 10, the PDF itself is not accessible. So someone can't actually use, for example, a screen reader application to actually access the content. The other way is to put it in text or HTML on a separate page from the podcast show with a link to it, which is an accessible method. But then you start losing the advantage of SEO because the content is not directly linked. And my favorite approach is to put the transcript directly on the page where you're displaying the podcast. And that makes it easy to find, and it's right there for search engines as well. As for show notes, I think show notes are a great thing, and they're really an addition to transcript, because you're not consuming that content the same way. The transcript is really a way to access the show itself, whereas the show notes is a way to identify what's most important or something that the host actually wants to highlight. The show notes is also a great method for people with cognitive impairments to access the content. So they don't have to struggle to try to understand an entire half hour or hour show, or trying to read maybe 2,000 words transcript. So I think both the show notes and the transcripts have an important role to play from an accessibility perspective.
Great. Yeah, I think it's good to hear you say that, because I totally agree. I think that a show notes is a different, it serves a different purpose, isn't it? The show notes for me is it's written for the written word as opposed to a written version of the spoken word, so that you can read it. Quite often I find that show notes are for people who revisit the content actually, or pre-listening to the content. They'll go in there, they'll find it through SEO, through search, they'll read it through, they'll get an idea of what you're going to talk about, but they'll go to the podcast actually to get the engaging content, like you say. So, and the way we've done transcripts, I think the way I find it works best, maybe you're going to tell me this doesn't work very well, but I suppose the basic version is you have the show notes, and then you have here's the transcript below it, and that should be presumably accessible because it's all there in the main page. But one tool that we've used in the past to make it so that the show notes page is quite neat, and there's a little kind of expansion box which has a transcript in it, and it's something called Visual Composer, a tool called Visual Composer that works on WordPress that can do that. And it's an expansion box. And I think from looking at it that it's accessible enough because it's not hiding it. But tell me if you have any experience with that. Do tools like that can hide away a sort of 2,000 word transcript, can they impair the accessibility of a page?
It really depends on the tool itself and how it's coded.
How it does it, yeah.
Because the ability to collapse or expand content can be very useful.
Okay.
You have to look at a couple different things. The first one is, can you actually trigger the expansion with the keyboard only?
Okay, yes.
Because there's a lot of people that aren't able to actually use a mouse. So if your ability to expand the content is on click only, then that's a problem. Mm-hmm. The other aspect, which is a little bit harder for you to test, but which has a big impact, is that when the content is expanded, it needs to be announced by screen readers. So when your page changes context, when new content appears on the page, it needs to be available for assistive technologies. And there's a couple of ways to test that, which generally involve having a screen reader available to test and looking at code itself. So I'm happy to have a quick look if you want to send me a link and I can double check. We can maybe add that to the show notes later on.
Yeah, that'd be good actually. We'll do that then. We'll follow up. I'll send you a link to one of those tools. Especially, I think Visual Composer is one of the most commonly used WordPress visual designers. It's one of the easiest ways to offer that kind of functionality. So so it's probably quite useful to the listener to know that. But you raise a good point there in terms of testing. Like I'm sure I remember 5-6 years ago or something, whenever I was working on this back then, that there were tools that you could input a URL and it would give you a rating for a page. Is that something that's useful for people testing their show notes?
There's a lot of automated testing tools for accessibility out there. Some are better than others. Mm-hmm. The UK government digital services last year created the worst accessible page in the world. It basically went about creating a page that had over 150 accessibility errors.
Oh, really?
And then they threw in that page to a whole bunch of automated accessibility testers to see how accurate it was. And the best tool didn't even raise 40% of the issues on the page.
Right, okay.
So automated testing tools are a fantastic way to get a pulse or a feel for what's going on a page, mm-hmm. but they're not likely to find everything. That said, let's keep in mind that every page is not going to have 150 different errors trying to trick a tool. Mm. And I think if you do nothing else, or if you don't have the ability or knowledge to do anything else than testing, by all means, run it through a testing tool.
Yeah,
I would strongly recommend Tenon.io. That's Tenon.io. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic tool. You can do one page at a time on their homepage, or you can actually subscribe to their service for ongoing testing. So that's a great service. The other is the WebAIM Wave toolbar. That's WAVE toolbar, which is free to test.
Sure. Okay, that's excellent. Yeah, I think you're right. I suppose there's perfect methods, there's good methods, and then there's methods which help people actually do something.
Yeah.
And doing something at least is better, like you say, than nothing. So
there's one of this thing, you know, I often talk to clients and they say, well, we can't make our website accessible for this person who's paralyzed from neck down, blind and deaf. And I'm thinking, yeah, however, chances are you're not going to meet that edge case all the time, and you could make your site 80% accessible with 20% of your effort.
Yeah.
And surely it's a great win to hit those low hanging fruits and improve things. So I, by all means, you know, use automated testing tools, identify the problems, try to fix them, and improve accessibility as much as you can, both on your site and your show, and you'll be away laughing.
Excellent. So looking at the, was there anything else you'd like to add to the sort of audio side of things and making audio more accessible, or is transcripts really the method for doing that?
Yeah, transcript really is the way to make audio accessible.
Perfect. Okay. So moving on to the text then on your show notes, have you got some tips? I mean, it's kind of going away from the podcasting side of things, but we still have to make blog posts. We still have to make show notes. So do you have a kind of top few steps for people to start making their text material more accessible?
Yeah. The first thing to keep in mind is that all your nice, pretty layout, all the fancy styling and all that, at the end, what you're wanting is deliver content. So it has to make sense on its own. A few ways to do that is to make sure you break sections of content using headings. So H1, H2, H3, and make sure they're hierarchical. So if you're having your home page, the title of the page being an H1, maybe the title of your post is going to be a H2, and then subsequent sections within that are going to be H3. Mm-hmm. It's very useful for screen reader users who often rely on headings to get a glimpse of what's on the page. There's a screen reader user survey that came out last December that shows 67% of screen reader users rely on headings to navigate a page. That's really important to create that structure there.
Yeah.
The other is, think about plain English. Make short sentences that are fairly straightforward to understand. Front load the content. So if you have important stuff, don't put it at the bottom of a 100-word post. You know, make sure you put it up front. Mm-hmm. And remember that if you use images, if they're informative images, you want to have alt text in there. If it's a decorative image, if it's, you know, just something to make it pleasing to the eye, then you want the alt attribute to be there, but you put an empty alt attribute.
Okay, right. Because it's not actually useful content, it's not adding value. Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't add value. So when an assistive technology such as a screen reader comes across it, it's either going to say, there's an image here and there's no alt attribute, so I don't know what to do with it.
Right.
Or it's going to say, there's an image here, but the alt attribute is empty, so I can ignore it. Mm. Or it sees the image, it sees the alt attribute has text in it, and then it can announce that attribute to the screen reader user.
Yeah, perfect. It's funny the advice you gave there, the fact that all of that actually makes it much better for real, for you know, the average user as well, I guess, because headings help us read content, help us skim content. Clarity and simple words and all that makes content much more engaging, much more easy to read as well for anyone. So it's stuff we should be doing anyway, I guess, that then helps accessibility.
I wrote several times about accessibility benefits everyone, and there's all kinds of aspects. You know, you take a layout that benefits someone who has a cognitive impairment, so you don't want too busy or flashing things, or you want to make sure that the main content is easy to find.
Yeah.
Well, it's also going to help the woman who just has a squirming toddler in her arm and is trying to access information on her cell phone.
Yes.
And, well, she's not impaired, obviously, but her cognitive abilities are somewhat distracted. So from that perspective, accessibility is benefited. One of my favorite ones is gray text on gray background.
Yeah.
It's incredibly difficult to read if you have low vision, but go outside in the sun on your mobile phone and suddenly you can't make sense of it either. So yes, accessibility primarily is making sure that content is reachable and usable by people with disabilities, but you also end up with having all kinds of super benefits. I was mentioning plain English. Well, how many of your audience is actually non-native English speakers, you know?
Yeah.
So that makes it easy for that. It also makes it easy for Google Translate to actually be able to translate your site and provide it in other languages.
Yeah, perfect. That's really useful. In terms of the tools we're using, you know, a big proportion of the web is on WordPress, and especially podcasters, because it's a really useful tool for delivering a podcast. Is WordPress out the box quite accessible, or are there things we need to do to prepare it?
Yeah. See, WordPress, last number I heard was 35% of all sites on the internet were WordPress driven.
Yeah, yeah.
WordPress out of the box is generally accessible, but there's a few things that are problematic with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few things that actually can be done easily to solve it. The first thing is make sure you use an accessibility ready theme. Mm-hmm. And when you're hunting for a theme, whether it's a theme you're going to use as is or you're going to create a child theme with, search for accessibility ready, and that's going to get you a good part of the way there. The other thing, there's obviously we generally want a contact form, and the best contact form from an ability to adapt it is contact form 7. To make sure contact form 7 is fully accessible, there's a plugin that's available, so it improves the accessibility of that form. And that plugin is by a guy called Joe Dawson. So he's got a few plugins that are specifically towards accessibility. They're free, they're brilliant. And the other plugin that Joe makes is WordPress Accessibility. And you add that, it layers over your accessibility ready theme, and it makes a whole bunch of changes under the hood that you won't really see yourself, but it just makes it so much easier for people with needing assistive technologies to interact with the site.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's great. That's a few good practical steps that people can take to start making their WordPress more accessible straight away. That's excellent. Okay. Right. I think, I mean, that covers everything I wanted to know, really. Is there anything you haven't talked about yet that you think is important for people to know?
Yeah, just thinking about this fact that when you're not used to doing accessibility, it takes a little bit more effort. It may take a little bit more resource, but it's worth doing it from the perspective of it's the right thing to do. It's also worth doing it because you are going to benefit a whole bunch of people that don't necessarily have disabilities, just like we were mentioning. And once you're past this learning curve stage, it just becomes part of your workflow, and it doesn't really take that much more time or energy or effort. You just do it.
Yeah, yeah. And like you explained at the start, there's all these side benefits actually in general, such as the SEO benefit of having more text on your pages, the readability benefit, the engagement benefit for all users. So yeah, definitely worth putting the time into. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining me in the show, Nick. It's been really interesting to go through it. Really good to get this out there. A really valuable subject, I think. So thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on. And I'm always open for questions. You can find me on Twitter, on my website, by email. So feel free to reach out.
So where can people find you on Twitter?
Twitter, I am Vavroom, V-A-V-R-O-O-M.
Perfect. And your show, better plug your show as well, actually. What's the podcast
people should go and listen to afterwards? My show is the Accessibility Rules Podcast. Mm-hmm. So that's A11YRULES.com.
Yeah.
And A11Y is the numeronym for accessibility. So the word accessibility starts by A and finishes by Y, and there's 11 letters in between.
Ah, perfect.
So when you're on Twitter and you see that hashtag A11Y, that's what it stands for.
Ah, do you know what? I didn't know that. I've seen your, obviously the tag there on a lot of your posts, and I never understood why. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, yeah, definitely worth going and checking out Nick's podcast there. I've seen it putting out content on a regular basis. So there's always good stuff coming out there into the world. So go and check it out over there. Thanks again, Nick, for your time. And if you're out there listening, I hope you make a bit of an effort. At least look into it. Definitely the transcripts in the first place. Have a look into transcripts. Go and check out Trint if you want to as a first point. But there's other automated services out there too. And at least put a couple of transcripts up there. See what benefit it brings you. I bet you find yourself getting much more search traffic onto those posts. Maybe growing your audience bit by bit, just through adding a bit of accessibility and doing the right thing at the same time. All right, well, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next Podcraft in a few weeks. Until then, see you later.